Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are jumping into the story of a man whose name is, well, practically synonymous with ambition and conquest, Napoleon Bonaparte.
Right, and we're going to try and forget the marble statues and, you know, the historical memes.
We're going deep into the mechanics of his success and his ruin.
He's still one of history's most analyzed figures, but in many ways, he's also one of the most misunderstood. We've pulled together a stack of sources for this, but we're really anchored by a detailed analytical biography from the military historian David Gates.
And Gates gives us this really unromantic, demythologized look at Napoleon. So our mission for you, the listener, is to really understand Gates' dual thesis.
Which is that Napoleon was, on one hand, this unparalleled military genius.
Of course.
But also, and this is key, he was simultaneously the architect of modern Europe. We're going to unpack how those two forces, the general and the modernizer, were just, you know, completely linked throughout his spectacular rise and his catastrophic fall.
And the relevance today is just, it's profound. I mean, you look at legal systems, especially in continental Europe, and they still carry the DNA of his Napoleonic code.
And tactically, too. His mobilization strategies, the sheer scale of his warfare, that really laid the foundation for what we now call total war. He didn't just win battles. He changed how the world organized itself to fight them.
Okay, so to get this cold, analytical perspective, we really need to know the author. Who is David Gates?
He's a fixture in the world of British military history. He was a reader and senior lecturer at places like Aberdeen and Sheffield. So his analysis is grounded in very serious academic rigor, not just storytelling.
He's not a general historian, then. He's more like a specialized mechanic of war.
Exactly. And his authority on the Napoleonic era comes from his huge work, The Spanish Ulcer, A History of the Peninsular War. He didn't just skim the high points of Napoleon's career.
No, he wrote the definitive study of the one long, bloody campaign that basically bled the French Empire dry.
And that focus on the ulcer, it gives him a unique lens, doesn't it? He approaches Napoleon with this real scholarly detachment. He avoids the hero worship.
But also resists the temptation to just paint him as a cartoon villain.
Precisely. Gates is interested in Napoleon the Commander-in-Chief. He's dissecting the material realities, the logistical failures, the attrition rates, the sheer mechanics of feeding and moving hundreds of thousands of men across Europe.
He's less concerned with Josephine and more concerned with the state of the boots on the ground.
That's a perfect way to put it.
Which brings us right to the book's central premise. Gates lays out this dual thesis. Napoleon's power, his dominance, and his ultimate ruin were all a direct, inevitable consequence of his singular genius as a soldier.
Right. If you had to define his true vocation, his job, okay, it was warfare.
So all the other decisions he made, political or diplomatic, they were always secondary to military objectives.
Absolutely. He was a man who, when faced with a political problem, inevitably reached for a military solution. And that strategy, well, it worked brilliantly until it just didn't.
But here's the second part of that argument, and it's crucial. Gates says Napoleon wasn't just some bolt from the blue.
No, he was the inevitable product of the revolutionary upheaval. The old aristocratic hierarchy was shattered, it created a power vacuum, and the French system suddenly became a true meritocracy.
The carrière ouverte au talent.
The career open to talent. Someone with ruthless, merit-based talent was going to rise, and that someone was Napoleon.
And this is the paradox that really cements his importance. He was this force of destruction against the old European order, shattering empires and dynasties.
But in doing so, he became the architect of new, highly efficient, modern institutions. The Civil Code, the Bank of France, these administrative reforms, they weren't just enlightened acts. They were acts of modernization, driven by necessity.
So the book itself is a chronological analysis, but with this very tight focus on strategic and tactical decisions. Every domestic reform, every treaty, is seen through the lens of supporting the military machine.
The core thesis is non-negotiable for Gates.
Yeah.
The empire was won, maintained, and ultimately lost entirely on the battlefield.
Okay, so let's start that ascent. His origins were key.
Absolutely. He was a Corsican outsider, a noble, but from a modest family, and his training was in artillery, a technical field. It was about skill, not who your father was. That background gave him this ferocious ambition.
And the revolution was his launch pad. It wasn't just that the old officers fled, it was that the entire system suddenly valued competence over birthright.
In this new carrière ouverte au talent, a young, mathematically minded artillery officer could just bypass decades of traditional hierarchy overnight.
And his big moment, his true emergence, came during the first Italian campaign in 1796.
Yes, this is where Gates details the birth of the Napoleonic method. And it wasn't about having more troops, it was about speed and decisiveness. He used these extreme forced marches to keep his enemies separated, off balance.
Which let him use that strategy of the central position, right? Hitting each isolated enemy column before they could all link up.
Exactly. You hear names like Lodi, Arcole, Rivoli from that campaign. And Gates explains that these battles showed his mastery of what's called operational art.
Which is not just tactics, but the stuff in between.
Right. If tactics is how you fight the battle, operational art is how you coordinate massive troop movements between the battles. It's the logistics of getting to the fight faster than anyone expects.
And that's exactly how he converted military success into political currency.
He didn't just win battles, he sold the victories. He acted as a kind of independent proconsul in Italy, negotiating treaties and using his army bulletins as pure propaganda to craft this image of an indispensable national savior.
And that reputation was the leverage he used for the coup of 18 Brumaire, which put him in power.
So once he has that political control during the consulate period, the domestic reforms begin. But this is where Gates makes that crucial analytical move.
They weren't just acts of good governance.
No. They were pragmatic necessities for forging what he calls an efficient war-making state.
How so? How do they feed the war machine?
Well, you need a stable system to pay for, equip, and conscript a massive army. The Napoleonic Coup, it streamlined property and inheritance laws, which made taxation and conscription far more reliable.
And the Bank of France stabilized the currency. The prefectural system imposed this central, rational administration all across France.
So stability and centralization weren't the ends. They were the means to ensure endless manpower and finance.
And this foundation is what allowed for the great campaigns, the absolute zenith of his military genius, Austerlitz in 1805. That has to be his tactical masterpiece.
Oh, it's a spectacular moment. He deliberately weakens his right flank, luring the Russians and Austrians in, making them think it's an easy target.
And then just smashes their center with a hidden reserve.
The execution was only possible because of the superior structure of his army, the Corps d'Armée.
That system is incredible. Instead of one huge, cumbersome army, he splits his forces into these self-contained, highly flexible mini-armies.
Each commanded by a marshal. These corps could march independently, find their own food, and fight alone for a day or two, which gave the emperor incredible flexibility and speed.
It's how he pulled off maneuvers like Ulm, where he captured an Austrian army without a major battle, and then just annihilated the Prussians at Jena-Auerstedt.
But Napoleon couldn't quit while he was ahead, and Gates highlights that the very ambition that drove his ascent also became the engine of his destruction. His genius led directly to strategic overreach.
And the major strategic error, according to Gates, was the continental system.
This attempt to defeat Britain not with an invasion, but with economic warfare. He wanted to close every port in Europe to British trade.
But enforcing an economic blockade that requires constant military expansion just to keep customs houses shut, it stretched his resources thinner and thinner.
And this is where we hit the two fatal campaigns. First, the Spanish ulcer, starting in 1808. This was the anti-Austerlitz.
How so?
Napoleon's system was designed to crush armies in a decisive battle. But in Spain, he faced a people's war, the local guerrilla, or little war.
So it became this bleeding wound. French successes against the actual Spanish army were meaningless because the populace just wouldn't submit.
And this insurgency, backed by the British under Wellington, proved that his sophisticated military machine was completely ill-equipped to defeat a stubborn, dispersed people. It just consumed hundreds of thousands of veteran troops.
Which brings us to the ultimate failure of logistics. The Russian disaster of 1812.
Gates really emphasizes that the staggering scale, a 500,000-man army combined with that vast, empty landscape, it just guaranteed disaster. His whole system of living off the land was impossible.
You can have the most brilliant strategy in the world, but if your supply wagons break down and your soldiers are dying of dysentery before they even see a Russian soldier, the strategy means nothing.
The army was defeated by distance, disease, and the logistics of scale long before General Winter finished the job. And the destruction of that veteran corps, it shattered the myth of invincibility.
Even so, Gates gives him credit for his brilliant, almost desperate defense of France in 1814. He was maneuvering dizzyingly against overwhelming odds.
It was tactically inspired, but strategically hopeless.
And then, after the 100 days and the final defeat at Waterloo, a near-run thing, decided by the timing of the Prussian arrival, we're left with that final paradox.
A radical modernizer who spread rational administration and new legal systems across Europe.
But also a tyrant whose relentless ambition plunged the continent into catastrophic, generation-defining wars.
And that tension really drives the core themes here. The first one is the primacy of military genius. Napoleon's power was transactional. His crown was really a fragile helmet.
He had to keep winning. The minute he failed, the whole political edifice would crumble.
And that translates so clearly to modern leadership. I mean, if you're a leader whose entire power rests on just one core perishable competency, say, you're the brilliant founder who's the only one who understands the code, your whole organization is built on a fault line.
The minute that skill fails to deliver or the market changes, the structure just collapses because you've neglected the broader skills of delegation and management.
The second theme is that fatal flaw, ambition without an off switch. Gates argues he could have consolidated a lasting peace after Austerlitz. He could have secured France's dominance.
But he couldn't stop. He constantly sought military solutions, always moving the goalposts, failing to stabilize the gains he already had.
It's the classic trap of overexpansion. In any enterprise, you reach a point of diminishing returns. Knowing when to stop, consolidate, and declare victory is just as important as the initial drive to succeed. He lacked that stability mechanism.
And theme three, the harsh lesson of 1812, the primacy of logistics. A dazzling strategy is worthless if the supply chain can't bear the weight of the execution.
We still quote the principle, an army marches on its stomach. In modern management, this is your infrastructure. Your supply chain, your internal communications, your HR support. It's the non-negotiable foundation.
If your operational support fails, your most innovative strategy is going to starve on the march to Moscow.
Now, while Gates focuses on the general, he does acknowledge Napoleon's skill as a self-mythologizer. I mean, he was a master of propaganda, but he also left behind some incredibly revealing statements.
Let's look at the paradox in three key ideas.
All right.
First, the one he promoted later in life. The civil code is my true glory.
That's fascinating, right? Because it shows he understood that lasting institutional reform mattered more than the fleeting glory of military conquest. He was highlighting the statesman over the conqueror. He knew the code would outlive him.
Then there's his powerful self-description. I am the revolution on horseback.
That just perfectly captures his mandate. He saw himself as the physical embodiment of meritocracy and revolutionary progress, riding out to reshape Europe. It reflects that great paradox of his rule.
He claimed to embody liberty and equality, even while he was imposing authoritarian methods that betrayed those same ideals.
And finally, the brutal admission that really underlies everything, Gates argues. Power is my mistress.
That explains the perpetual motion.
It shows his singular, ruthless focus. Everything else, diplomacy, family, the welfare of his soldiers, was completely subordinate to the pursuit and maintenance of absolute political control. Power was the obsession, the ultimate goal, not a means to an end.
You know, Gates' analysis offers some genuinely practical insights for organizations today, especially from that corps d'armée system we talked about.
Oh, it was an operational marvel. Each unit was self-contained with its own infantry, cavalry, artillery, and the marshals were empowered to act independently within the emperor's grand strategic vision.
So no bottlenecks. He didn't have to micromanage every single movement.
And that is a phenomenal blueprint for modern organizational design. It emphasizes decentralized authority, empowering your mid-level managers to use their own initiative while making sure every unit is still aligned with the central goal. You get speed and flexibility without chaos.
And on the strategic front, there's that timeless lesson of sea power and soft power. Napoleon consistently underestimated Britain.
He was completely focused on land battles. He couldn't grasp that Britain's true resilience was rooted in its navy, its deep pockets, and its ability to just finance coalition after coalition against him.
The application is so clear. True power is never just hard power, like military might or market dominance. It has to include economic stability, diplomatic influence, cultural sway. Sheer resilience.
If you only focus on brute force, you'll inevitably neglect the foundational pillars of strength that your rivals are using to defeat you by simply waiting you out.
For me, the most profound insight from Gates was seeing how thoroughly Napoleon was defined by his primary vocation. That connection, how every single domestic success, the code, the Bank of France, was just a means to an end.
a tool to fund and sustain the war effort.
Exactly. He was the general first, the emperor second.
And my final takeaway is that his story is the ultimate cautionary tale that genius has limits when it's faced with immutable realities. Charisma and tactical brilliance, they can't overcome geography, they can't overcome the laws of physics and logistics, and they can't overcome the sustained will of a determined people.
So lasting change requires resilient institutions that can survive the leader, not just the fleeting brilliance of one individual.
That's a profound distinction, and one worth carrying forward.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.